WBEZ is supported by Chicago Humanities, presenting live events with historians Doris Kearns Goodwin and John Meacham, comedian Reggie Watts and filmmaker Miranda July, and artists Hebrew Brantley and Amanda Williams in conversation, plus MSNBC chief correspondent Ali Velshi on small yet powerful acts of courage throughout history. Tickets for these events and more conversations on arts, culture, and current affairs at chicagohumanities.org.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. Mike Davis is a theater reporter here at WBEZ. Mike, welcome to The Rundown.
You know, it took you a long time to have me here, but I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm happy you're finally here. You know, I don't remember getting any pitches from you. I'm just going to say that.
Okay, that's fair. See, it's a two-way street. Well, I'm happy to be here now.
Okay, good. Let's focus on the now. Mike Davis is new in his role as theater reporter. Always fun to engage in a little cheeky banter with a new colleague. Mike recently went out and talked to a dozen actors working in the Chicago theater scene. Now, you probably know that scene is huge. There's the big theater names most people have heard of, Steppenwolf, The Good Men, Broadway in Chicago. But there's also a significant storefront theater scene, a.k.a. non-equity theaters. We'll get into why they're also called non-equity in a few minutes, but for now, I'll just say they're smaller theaters. Sometimes really small, like some of them are tucked away somewhere on your residential street, which means they're clearly different from the Goodmans and the Steppenwolves of Chicago.
The biggest difference would be budget size. Typically, the non-equity or storefront theaters, you know, that might have a budget size of $200,000 for a whole year versus those institutions you mentioned that will have million-dollar budgets.
As you can imagine, a smaller budget affects a lot of things, including how everybody putting a production together is paid. And when we're talking about money, everybody is going to have an opinion. Some of the actors Mike talked to say non-equity is life. Others say non-equity is exploitation. But the bottom line is the vast majority of theater actors in Chicago are struggling on the financial front, big box and storefront alike. Me and Mike are going to get into all that, including some of the hacks these folks are using to get by. But first, we both ended up seeing this play called Inanimate that's currently running at a storefront theater called Theater Wit in Lakeview. He's using that as an example to clarify the difference between big theaters and storefront theaters in the city.
Question number one, are you familiar with objectophilia?
No, I'm not. Never heard objectophilia. Never heard of it?
Objectophilia. No. I walked into a theater last weekend and...
Now that you're saying it, yes, this is the woman who fell in love with the Dairy Queen sign.
Yes. In one of the opening scenes, she's in a grocery store making love to a can opener. Mm-hmm. The audience was, whoa.
And she was at work. So she wasn't just a patron.
She lost her job.
Yes, of course.
So the audience went from, whoa, what's happening, to comedy, right? Like, because the moment immediately became funny. And then all of a sudden, we're all laughing and looking at each other like, could you believe that? I couldn't believe that. But these are the type of stories that you're going to see in the storefronts. They're taking the really big swings. They're taking chances. They're telling the stories that might not have big, huge commercial success. Mm-hmm. They're not going to tell you the story that you've heard a million times or, you know, that production that gets ran and ran. Nah, they're doing new, fresh works. And a lot of people love that.
Yeah. Talked to several actors, one of them named Brittany Ellis. She usually is working in these non-equity theaters. Tell me about her.
Well, Brittany not only wanted to be a part of theater, Brittany wanted to make it. So for about 5 years, she ran her own company where they were literally making theater. Non-equity wasn't the easiest thing in the world.
I liken non-equity theater to indie films. So if you are like wanting to go see a Marvel film or a big blockbuster, you'll go downtown and see The Good Men or Chicago Shakes or Steppenwolf. But if you want to see a good indie film, you'll go to a non-equity house. It's cheaper. There's lower budget. but there's like a real sense of make your own. Like we made our own props. It's kind of the highest form of craftsmanship, building a show out of nothing, out of a $0 budget and what you can kind of pull together from the thrift store and using a hot glue gun.
When you look at the economy right now, theater is expensive. And to produce a show and pay the actors, the costumes, the lights, the venues, it's so expensive. Non-equity is able to do it at a fraction of the price. Now, there are other costs that come with that, and we're going to get into all of that. but as long as there's an alternative to millions and millions of dollars to make theater happen, I think people will always lean into that alternative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there's a cost for the consumer as well, right? Absolutely. The person, the theater goer, will often does end up paying more when they do go to Steppenwolf or Goodman.
Yes.
Tell me about the relationship between these storefront theaters and the larger theaters.
I mean, there's so much crossover, Aaron, between the two. I mean, first and foremost, a lot of the actors that you're going to see when you go to the larger venues, they got their start in storefront, in non-equity. A lot of the younger performers who are fresh out of college, you might not be able to just walk into the Goodman, hey, here I am. Like, no, you want to build your resume. Storefront is a really good place for you to really get those gigs. And then sometimes there's crossover where you will see some of these actors that I talk to who act in non-equity, you know, they might work back of house in the equity theaters. Mm. So there's like just so much crossover in the relationships. They don't compete. They coexist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's get into this term non-equity. In your reporting, you talk about the actors that power these storefront theaters. Yes. Most of them are called non-equity actors. What is the difference between an equity actor and a non-equity actor? Break that down.
Well, there's literally an actors union.
Okay.
Once an actor joins that union, they are now equity, and they can be hired freely by the equity houses, quote unquote. These are the bigger venues that only hire equity performers, right? Performers
unionized.
In the union.
Yeah.
And as you would imagine, that means higher pay, different benefits versus actors who are not in the union.
Do some non-equity actors end up, well, you said some of them will end up acting in these larger theaters as back of the house. Do any of them end up with lines on stage?
Yes, yes. There is a gray area. So if you are an equity house, the union does allow for you to have certain slots where you can bring in a non-equity actor. When that happens, that non-equity actor will be paid at the lowest level that the union allows.
Okay. So they are still within that union pay, but
yes.
they can't negotiate any higher
that. And the equity house couldn't do a show with all non-union actors. It'll be like one, maybe two. And if you go to shows and look at the playbill, you'll be able to see who's who, because some shows in non-equity will have an equity actor that will pop up and be in their show.
How can a person tell if they look at the playbill? Like, what does it say?
There'll usually be like an asterisk next to one of the names of the performers. And that will like indicate, like if you're at a non-equity show, it'll show, oh, this person is in the union. The show that I mentioned before with the can opener scene.
Yeah.
There was an actor in that show who is in the union, and it was noted in the playbill.
Just get into some of the conditions of a non-equity actor. What is their lifestyle like?
I talked to another actor, Chase Wheaton-Worrell, and he told me all about how difficult just the whole payment process is for non-equity actors.
They usually pay in just a stipend for the whole 6 weeks or so that you are in rehearsal, and usually they'll pay at closing. So if you are trying to like pay rent and utilities and groceries and that kind of stuff, you're not going to see any of that money until the show closes, like easily 2 to 3 months after you audition or even get cast. And usually that stipend non-equity level are around $300, $400, $500-ish.
Wow. And I know you talked to one person too, who said non-equity actors, that they're straight up exploited. Tell me about Claire Kaplan.
Well, Claire Kaplan talked about the culture of non-equity theater. Here's Claire.
I don't think it's sustainable, and it relies on, frankly, young people who have a lot of energy and a lot of ambition. And, you know, people like me in my mid-30s who just like have a lot of belief and are kind of crazy about it. I would like to see that culture change a little bit, where like, if you can't afford to pay your actors, you really can't afford to put on the show, is how I feel.
Okay. All of this is begging a question. What is it like for these equity actors, these unionized actors? I guess one, given all of this, might assume that it's better, but tell me, what is that life?
It's better in the sense of your pay is going to be higher. Your pay is going to be more consistent. I think if you are on the higher end of being an equity actor, then life will probably be great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the performing arts in general, the industry is just kind of struggling. I spoke with someone from the National Endowment of Arts. They're the biggest arts funder in the country. They track all of this data about the economy of the arts, and pay in the performing arts in general is down. And, mm-hmm. and the wages and salaries are well below the national average. So this is just not an easy industry to make a living in general right now, for equity or non-equity.
So you talked about actors taking a day job to kind of get by. What are some of the other kind of hacks that people have when they're not able to get a steady income from the thing it is that they love?
Well, one hack is to have a partner.
Okay.
And not even like a rich partner, but a partner that has a steady job with benefits. Some performers will have a second job in the industry. Some actors will work tech or do other things.
Yeah.
So you got to be scrappy and you got to hustle.
Wow. Sounds a lot like this journalism life.
a lot of similarities.
So are there some non-equity actors out here trying to eventually become equity actors?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. But there are also non-equity actors who have no desire to go equity.
Okay. So first, let's start with, for the people who are trying to go yes. and become equity, in order to join the union, you need a certain number of productions under your belt, or?
And you have to pay? Yes. All of the above.
Okay. Membership dues, membership fees.
Yes.
And experience.
Exactly.
Okay. So you got to work up to that. It sounds like for some people, being a non-equity actor is not a career. It can't be. It's impossible. But yet, as you said, they keep doing it. They love it. What are some of the reasons for that you're hearing from folks?
I think a lot of the folks that I've heard from would actually push back on what you said. I think they would argue that this is a career.
Mm.
This is their life. They are actors. I've had actors explicitly say that acting is as important to them as food and water. Like they don't look at the double life or the hustle, the bustle as, I mean, yes, it's a burden, but it's something that they take on willingly mm-hmm. because acting is that important to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is more than their career. This is who they are. So for them, it's worth it. Because of the risks that the storefronts are taking, because of the types of stories that they're willing to tell, some of these actors have no desire to ever leave storefront. Like, this is the life that they want, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. You talked to Sydney Genko. She is another non-equity actor. What does she have to say?
Sydney loves non-equity theater, but let's hear it from her directly.
I am definitely more interested in new works, in off-the-beaten-path things. I had absolutely zero interest in doing Hello Dolly and The Music Man for the rest of my career. Even though if I did that, that would pay my bills. You know, if I did that at the Equity Theaters, well, I use that term loosely. It would probably pay my bills. It would pay my bills when I had some work.
Man, all those, it would pay my bills when I had some work, probably, right? That's a lot of qualifiers.
Absolutely.
You know, Chicago is known for theater actors, but we don't have the commercial weight here of a Hollywood in L.A. or a Broadway in New York. You have been talking with these actors, getting a sense of how they're feeling about the scene here in Chicago compared to the other, compared, I say the other coasts because we call ourselves the third coast, but compared to the actual coasts. Tell me what you're hearing.
Most of them have lived in New York or L.A. or both.
Okay.
What I hear about the L.A. theater scene is that it's just a proxy. Like, everyone wants to be in movies, so they're not theater actors because they love it. They're just trying to get seen by a producer that will take them off stage and put them in a movie. So it just feels really transactional in L.A. And in New York is interesting because you can make a living in New York and you can get that job that's going to pay you good. It's the time in between that that a lot of these actors didn't like. And I heard a few say, I don't want to audition for a living. I want to act. So instead of getting one show, getting paid and then auditioning for a million, they like to be in Chicago where they're getting shows. And all of these non-equity actors that I'm talking to, when you look at their resumes, it's show, show, show. Like, they are working and they love the work. And I think that's what makes Chicago unique.
Mike Davis is a theater reporter here at WBEZ. Mike, this was great. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you should check out Mike's reporting on this. The title of his article is a question. Is Chicago still a livable city for its storefront theater actors? You can find that at WBEZ.org. And that's it for today. Thank you to Justin Bull and Sarah Stark for producing The Rundown, and to Ariel Van Clee for editing the show. Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. And a shout out to Jill, who gave us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Jill wrote, "It's exactly the level of detail, frequency, and content I was looking for to stay up to date on all things Chicago/Illinois news." Thank you, Jill. If you love the show, you can rate us and write a review like Jill. It helps more people find the show. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.